Ah, we have landed, and it is Bookland, and it is Tuesday, and it is a time when a truly terrific independent bookseller comes forth to Studio A and speaks before our microphone to tell you about some great books and some great titles that you are missing, perhaps, and you shouldn't. For goodness sakes. Our good friend Connie Brooks of Bat and Kill Books in Cambridge, New York, is here with some wonderful suggestions. Connie, good morning. Thank you very much for being here. A delight to have you with us.
You know, you have the best job in the world. I get to come on the radio and talk about great books.
It's pretty good deal. I get to listen. We're all good.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. So where do we begin?
Well, there's so many to talk about. So I have a fairly long list, so I'll try to buzz through these.
All right. These
are a whole bunch that I'm just excited about. I go on vacation in a couple weeks, and you know, I just get this huge stack that I bring. So some of these are in the stack. Just out today is a book called The Rathbones by Janice Clarke. The Rathbones is a gothic tale set in New England, which chronicles 100 years of a once prosperous, now crumbling whaling family, told by its last surviving member. Mercy Rathbone, 15 years old, is the diminutive scion of the Rathbone clan. Her father has been lost at sea for 7 years, ever since the last whale was seen off the coast of Connecticut. Mercy's memories of her father are growing dim, and she spends most of her time in the attic hideaway of her reclusive Uncle Mordecai, who teaches her the secrets of Greek history and nautical navigation through his collection of specimens and moldering books. But when a strange, violent visitor turns up one night, Mercy and Mordecai are forced to flee the crumbling mansion and set sail on a journey that will bring them deep into the haunted history of the Rathbone family. And you will certainly hear echoes of the Odyssey in the book, as well as Moby Dick, but it is a mythic tale all of its own.
It is The Rathbones by Janice Clarke. Next up?
Next is a book called Brewster by Mark Sluka. Brewster is a coming-of-age story set in 1968 in the town of Brewster, New York. The world is changing, and 16-year-old John Mosher is determined to change with it. Racked by guilt over his older brother's childhood death and stuck in a dead-end town, he turns his rage into victories, running track. Meanwhile, Ray Capitiano, a rebel as gifted with his fists as John is with his feet, is trying to take care of his baby brother while staying out of the way of his abusive ex-cop father. When John and Ray form a tight friendship, they find in each other everything they lack at home. But it's not until Ray falls in love with beautiful, headstrong Karen Dorsey that the three friends begin to dream of breaking away from Brewster for good. And the story goes from there.
Ah, they want to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Brewster is the name of the book. It is by Mark Sluka. Next.
Next is a book that just came out in paperback, The Secret Keeper by Kate Morton. It's wonderful. I keep passing it on to people, and I can't say too much because you don't want to have a spoiler. But just to introduce it, on an idyllic summer's day in the English countryside, 16-year-old Laurel Nicholson witnesses a shocking crime. From her vantage point in a treehouse, she watches her mother stab to death a stranger who has come along the lane. Now, 50 years later, Laurel and her sisters are meeting at the farm to celebrate their mother's 90th birthday. Realizing that this is her last chance to discover the truth about that long-ago day, Laurel searches for answers that can only be found in her mother's past. She unearths a secret history of three strangers from vastly different worlds thrown together in war-torn London, Dorothy, Vivian, and Jimmy. And it's great. I think every kid has probably had the experience of, well, my parents just came into an existence the day I was born, right? And no, they have much more to them.
There's some back history there that perhaps you should be aware of at some point in your life.
Yes, and her scenes in London with the bombs dropping from the Blitz, and it's just exhilarating.
All right, next up.
The next is The Telling Room, and this is a book that my husband just read and said, my God, you have to talk about it on the radio.
I love this book. I'll tell you a story in a moment, but okay. I love this book.
Okay. So here is what Chris gave me some notes. He said, you got to talk about it. The Telling Room, a tale of love, betrayal, revenge, and the world's greatest piece of cheese by Michael Paterniti. Paterniti has taken a slow food approach to this book, taking 12 years to chronicle the life of one cheese recipe in central Spain. Our main character is Ambrosio, a Castilian whose family has made small amounts of an artisanal cheese for generations. Generations, that is, until his mother did not take up the trade. So there is Ambrosio in the field, bringing in the hay with his father, who's very depressed and downtrodden. Ambrosio asks his father what's wrong, and the father's simple, honest response is, "I want a piece of that cheese," which sparks years of passion, experimentation, commercial success, and eventually betrayal and failure. But this is so much more than another food book. As the title suggests, this is a tale of tales, many of which take place in the telling rooms of central Spain, where wine and cheese are stored for winter's passage. It is in these telling rooms that our tale unfolds, and it is in these telling rooms where fact and fiction are sometimes at the discretion of the storyteller. Was Ambrosio duped by his childhood friend who had provided critical legal advice during expansion of the business? Paterniti is a fine storyteller and has discovered a rough gem, which he has honed expertly into a jewel of literature, fact or fiction.
Michael Paternini is one of my favorite writers. He doesn't write enough, in my opinion, but he is a great writer. He wrote a book called Driving Mr. Albert a number of years ago, which was a book, a true story, about how he heard an urban legend that there was this doctor in New Jersey who had Einstein's brain in his Tupperware in his house. And he goes up to the doctor and he says, you know, I heard this is true and can I see it? And the doctor, you know, is reluctant and says, no, get away. And over time he wears him down. And finally, he talks the doctor into wanting to return the brain, which he had essentially stolen. This is all true, to the Einstein family. And they go on a road trip with Einstein's brain in the trunk of the car. It is one of the greatest journalistic books I've ever read in my life.
Right.
I did an interview with him. We won a headliner award for that interview. So yes, that clouds my opinion a little bit. and this book reminded me of just how great a writer he is, how fantastic he is, and how just what a great of taking something like cheese and telling such a wonderful story. And I'm thrilled of this book, and I'm thrilled it's been getting great reviews because he's a great writer and he deserves all the attention.
Yeah. So I brought the book home and I said, handed it to Chris, my husband, and said, you know, you might want to read this. And I didn't see him for the next 3 days. So you know you've got a good one.
Yeah, good stuff. It's absolutely good stuff. All right, next.
Next is a very funny book, Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality by Jacob Tomsky. Just came out in paperback recently. Heads in Beds is a funny chronicle of the highs and lows of hotel life, told by an insider who's seen it all. You'll be amused and shocked as Tomsky spills the unwritten code of the bellhops, the antics that go on in the valet parking garage, the housekeeping department's dirty little secrets, not to mention the shameless activities of the guests, who are rarely on their best behavior. Tomsky's candid about what it's like to toil in a highly demanding service industry at the luxury level, where people expect to get what they pay for and sometimes a whole lot more than that. The employees are poorly paid, frequently abused by coworkers and guests alike, and are just trying to stay sane every day. So kind of this voyeuristic, I don't live in that world, but I'd like to hear about it for yeah, a couple days.
Give me an idea. Right. Heads in Beds. Next.
Oh, next is just a quick mention of a cookbook. It's a cookbook called Well Fed, Paleo Recipes for People Who Love to Eat by Melissa Jewell-Wan. I picked this cookbook up having no idea that it was a paleo cookbook. I don't eat a paleo diet, but I'm flipping through and I'm loving these gorgeous recipes and brought it home. And I made the baba ganoush and I made the chicken, and they have a recipe for cumin flavored carrots. And it was only after I started cooking from it, I realized, oh, paleo. So there's no grains, no legumes, no soy, no sugar, no dairy in any of these recipes, which is all fine and good. They're just delicious. The focus is on the protein and the flavor. And it's just a really fun and accessible cookbook. So I recommend it highly.
Excellent. Well-fed paleo recipes for people who love to eat.
Yes. Next, I brought in three books for kids. The first is a picture book that comes out today called Journey, written and illustrated by Aaron Becker. It's his first book. Journey is a stunner of a picture book, just an absolute stunner. It's a wordless picture book, so only paintings. And the lands in Journey are completely magical, just out of Aaron Becker's brain. A lonely girl takes a red marker to draw a magic door on her bedroom wall, and through it she escapes into a magical world. With the marker, she creates a boat, a balloon, and a flying carpet to carry her forth. If you're thinking that this sounds like Harold and the Purple Crayon, it's really not, and I love Harold and the Purple Crayon. But this is more Chronicles of Narnia than it is Harold and the Purple Crayon. The paintings are just phenomenal, intoxicating, and just complex. And adults would enjoy it just as much as kids.
Wow. Okay, yeah, great.
It's amazing.
Next.
And then two more picture books. And these are kind of bedtime picture books that have to do with math. So not something you usually hear. The first is Bedtime Math. It's by Laura Overdeck and Jim Payo. It's geared for ages 3 to 6. And inside the book, families will find fun math problems to tackle. Math that isn't just kid-friendly, but actually kid-appealing. With over 100 math riddles on topics from jalapenos and submarines to roller coasters and flamingos, the book has math problems that don't look like anything encountered in school. It's got three different levels of challenge for the little ones, the medium kids, and the big kids, so there's something for everyone. Because, you know, you read a story at night, but you could also introduce a math riddle, which would be pretty cool.
Absolutely. Bedtime math.
And then another math one. This one's for a slightly older set. This is Mesmerizing Math by Jonathan Litton and Thomas Flintham. And it's geared for ages 7 to 10. It's also a picture book that explores math ideas from the invention of zero to the geometry of a donut. The clear text that works in humor helps explain such topics as numbers, geometry, probability, and statistics. The focus is on making math accessible and exciting, and there's different problems for the kids at home to try to tackle. So math can be fun, math can be accessible.
So some great stuff for kids and for kids of all ages. Books
Absolutely.
On the list today. Any events coming up? Anything fun you want to talk about?
Yeah, we've got a lot that's coming up as we head into the fall. At the end of this month, on August 29th at 6 o'clock, we're doing a self-publishing workshop, which is actually presented by the Troy Bookmakers, our friends down here in Troy. They help people self-publish their books. They're a great company. Their company was founded by two independent booksellers, and they can really help people through the process. So it's a free workshop just to introduce people to the concepts and in a very kind of non-scary way. So that's on August 29th. That's at 6 o'clock at the bookstore. As we go into September, we have a whole bunch of authors coming. Probably most exciting for me, on September 18th, we welcome the Beekman Boys, the fabulous Beekman Boys, and they will be visiting to talk about and sign their new cookbook, which is the Beekman 1802 Heirloom Dessert Cookbook. That one's at 7 o'clock on September 18th, and I think we're going to have a line out the door, maybe around the block for that one, because everybody's excited to meet the Beekman Boys.
Absolutely.
And they've already done a cookbook that's just gorgeous, and this one is all desserts, like Blackberry Betty and, you know, all kinds of wonderful things. So,
all good stuff.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
Excellent. Well, for more information on Bat and Kill Books, you can go to their website, batandkillbooks.com, or better yet, visit them at 15 East Main Street in Cambridge. You will not be sorry you've done this. It is a gorgeous bookstore, and you'll think you're only going to go in for 10 minutes, and 4 hours later, you leave. That's what happened to
with
me.
Lots of books in your bags.
That's what happened to me this weekend. It's awful. It's great. Connie, it's always a pleasure. We love having you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.